find out what it's like to experience the world from above. Fly your own drone today. DroneCloneExperts.com specializes in high-quality, affordable drones. Now introducing their Limitless 2 model, equipped with a 4K camera for stunning Ultra HD clarity, GPS with precision auto return, and up to 25 minutes flight time on a single charge. Visit DroneCloneExperts.com now and enter promo code RADIO to receive 15% off your entire order. That's DroneCloneExperts.com.
Hello, Verbal Shenanigans fans. We're excited to welcome a new sponsor to the show. So listen on up. We're embarking on a new year, and that means new sponsors. Since we know many of you are sports fans, you are going to love this. Our newest sponsor of the show is DynastySportsEmpire.com. Say it one more time, DynastySportsEmpire.com. Otherwise known as DSE, they are the world's largest dynasty and keeper fantasy league management company in the world. We're not talking about your cute little home league with Uncle Reno or Draft Queens or FanDouche or one of those other companies. This is real fantasy general managing at its core. If you're tired of your mundane redraft league and have always wanted to retain your amazing team year in, year out, then DSE is where you want to be. They got fantasy hockey and hoops leagues now forming, so visit DynastySportsEmpire.com and see if you have what it takes to conquer their fantasy leagues today. That's DynastySportsEmpire.com. And again, we're very happy to welcome them to the Verbal Shenanigans family. We got a great episode for you today. Go check out DynastySportsEmpire.com.
Hey, Matt, it's Stephen Perkins. I play drums. So do you. And it's been a wonderful time hanging out in Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Oh, hello, and welcome on back to Verbal Shenanigans. Mike, quickly approaching episode 350 of these things. Much to the chagrin of a lot of people, we're keeping it going, and, you know.
Like the spouses?
Yeah, you know, pounding it forward, moving on, plowing ahead, if you will.
The family that don't listen to the episodes and ask you awkwardly during holiday conversations, so you're still doing the casting
thing? Oh, yeah. So my mom, even though I was talking to my mom today, I was like, man, we're like recording episode 300-something. She's like, wow, really? I'm like, yeah. She's like, well, how long you been doing it? Like, it's almost like she wonders if I was still doing that little thing you do.
I'm a little concerned. What did she think you and I did when you were over their place for a little while and I was going down to your basement out of curiosity?
I don't know. Tickle fights? Pillow fighting?
Oh, okay. I was worried about something devious. But
that was that was an interesting stage for the podcast where I had to move back to my parents for, I think it was like 5 months, maybe 4 months. I'm not sure.
Something.
And we were doing the podcast in my parents' basement, and which is great. It was fine. You know, we would hang out and whatnot, but every once in a while, I'd have to, you know, my mom would have to come down with a bin of laundry and like kind of walk through the podcast through. We'd be like, shh, we're podcasting, you know, which is a little weird when you're in your mid 30s.
Mom, we're talking to the guy who trained the dog from Brady Bunch. Keep it down.
He's the dog trainer, Mom. You know who this is,
Mom.
But, anyway, welcome to the show, Verbal Shenanigans. If it's your first time, that's Mike, I'm Scott, and essentially what we do here is we interview amazing guests, and we have subpar conversation with each other and talk about life and whatnot, but welcome to the show. Mike, are you in the holiday spirit? Are you feeling it a little bit?
I'm feeling kind of good, Scotty. We had our virtual company Christmas party, if you will. I won the big contests. They had like a quiz show kind of thing where they did it over the internet, and there was like 33 trivia questions about different holidays, and your boy Mike prevailed. So he's the proud owner of some sort of gift card worth, if I had to guess, $40 or $50.
Wow. Wow. Now, yeah. How many of those questions did you do a quick Google on?
I did not Google any. It was one of those, the quicker you answer, the more points, so it's better to guess it.
Ah.
But I would say for the most part, I had a good idea of the answer, the ones I got right before I clicked it off. So,
well, what was like the question that you got first that everybody else struggled on? You were like, yeah, I got this. What pulled you ahead?
I mean, there was one about what country would be known for celebrating Tet. I was like one of the few people who knew it was Vietnam.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a controversial question in there. They had a question, what is Frosty the Snowman's nose? And there's pictures. And I answered quick, and I picked the carrot. And at first, I'm like, you know, the song, he's got a button nose. And one of the things was a button.
Right.
And then when it came out, the carrot was the correct answer. And then everybody's like, well, wait a minute, the song. And then people were like, well, wait a minute, the TV show. There was huge controversy. I mean, we're going to have to bring it up with the government. We might have to bring it to the Supreme Court, my gift card winnings.
I hope that like a late fantasy football, like when you win by a point, and then the next morning they do a stat correction and then someone wins. I hope tomorrow you wake up and they're like, we're sorry, Mike, but Earl over here is the winner of the $37 Amazon gift card that was re-gifted from last year.
Oh. I think so.
Oh.
I'm not too terribly concerned. If I have to go down one, it's still a trophy. I took the screenshot of the me number one thing and I put it on Facebook, but
yeah, I noticed you have it framed large on your wall already behind you, which is weird that you finished a couple hours ago and you have a what looks to be like a 3-foot by 3-foot sign on your wall with number one.
I'm calling some contractors about getting the electricity done so I have proper lighting
right
on the piece of paper. You know, I told you not to call me because I've been waiting by my cell phone to hear like all the local TV stations calling me up, asking me for the 11 o'clock news. You know, was it tough? Am I going to challenge Ken Jennings down the road? It's, you know, things like that.
It's also weird. We've been doing this show for 6 years, and it's the first time I've ever seen you in a full suit for this episode. It's strange.
Well, you know, I mean, this has to lead to something else. I got to figure there's some kind of scouts for like some kind of like knowledge bases or like game shows or something. You know, I'm guessing there's going to be some kind of draft where I got to be prepared to be selected in the first round. And, you know, I get to hug my mom and I put on the cap with the company's name on it. And
it's also interesting. I was just on Georgia's Craigslist, and I noticed your car is up for sale already on the private owner section.
Yeah, listen, I know I'm gonna make big things happen. I'm gonna go to Price is Right and just kill it, and like Drew Carey be like, man, I've never saw anybody win 2-putt like that, and nobody's plinko'd like you, Berlew. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I mean, I'm a legend. What can I tell you, Drew? Love the show. Your old show, too.
Weird that you posted those pictures on Instagram of those contractors digging out your new in-ground pool. I mean, very strange how quick you are you're rising to success through this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm largely in debt right now, but I can only assume that will change after this victory. Mm. You know, I mean, they say, you know, a lot of rookies, they spend their early contract, but then like when they become superstars, then they get the big bucks and they understand and whatever. It'll be like a good little note in my documentary when it comes around.
So. Right. Also interesting that you got four more dogs. Four.
Yeah, that's I mean, I, that fun fact that had nothing to do with tonight. Oh, it just naturally, I saw them and I grabbed them.
Strangely, they have other people's collars and addresses on them, but you know.
Yeah, but I'm like, listen, want a holiday quiz show? I'm allowed to do this,
right?
Georgia law.
Also, your wife sent me a video of you taking down the street sign and putting up your name on the street sign that you guys live on, which is interesting too. Strange strategy.
Yeah, I'm very upset. MapQuest has not updated yet. it's still showing Kent Lane instead of the Burroughs Avenue.
Right. Right. I mean, you did a pretty bad job with the cardboard and the magic marker, I got to tell you.
Yeah, I don't really know what street signs are made of, so I just kind of winged it. You know, I grabbed some like flour and some old paint cans, and I think it'll be a far right. I mean, if you get lost on a street that has no sign on it, just assume you're on the Burroughs Avenue.
I've always assumed that every time I go out down a weird street with no sign and it's dark and scary and there's a lot of dogs roaming around weird property.
Window, Burlew, how do I get away from here?
So yeah, I'm feeling a little bit more chipper. Those of you who don't know, my mother was in the hospital with COVID for a while and had some COVID related issues, and I got to see her for the first time today and the longest time, so that was a nice experience. We put our tree up, put the lights out, so starting to feel a little bit more normal. Not, I don't know what we're actually going to be doing on Christmas with all this going on, but I do have a question for you, okay? So Thanksgiving was...
Well, you're talking to the quiz master, so you know you're going to
get That's true. So we right now we're recording on December 10th, right? Mm-hmm. December 10th. So my Thanksgiving was the 26th of November, correct?
Sounds correct. Yep.
Okay. So Thanksgiving, I had a very small Thanksgiving. It was me, my wife, and one other couple because I couldn't see my family for Thanksgiving. So we actually ordered Thanksgiving food, which was the first time I ever did that. And God, I might do that every time. But anyway, so my neighbor, she's a, I wouldn't call her elderly, but she's probably in her 60s and she lives by herself and with a dog. And my wife was out there one night taking the dog out and they got to chatting. And my neighbor, she was like, "Oh, what are your Thanksgiving plans?" She's like, "Oh, I'm not doing anything. My daughter lives in New York and I can't really see her because she's got like the lady has like a, I think she has a, not cerebral palsy. She has something where she can't get sick really."
Okay.
And, you know, they talk or whatever. My wife comes in and she's like, "Oh," like she's upset, you know, like, sad, you know, let's call my neighbor Marie. That's not her name, but, Marie is, you know, she's not doing anything for Thanksgiving. I'm like, okay. I'm like, all right, well, you know what? We'll make her a plate, you know, and send it on over, send some food over. So Thanksgiving dinner comes, and before I even eat, like before we sit down, I make her a big heaping plate of like everything, you know? And I go over to her house and I knock on the door and I say, "Hey, Marie," like, and she's like, "Hi," you know, it takes a while to answer the door. And I'm just like, "Here you go. Happy Thanksgiving." And she's like, "Oh, you know, oh, thank you." She kind of had like, you know, tears in her eyes. So it was a really nice, touching moment. Okay. Now, here's my question for you. I gave her a plate of food on a plate from my kitchen.
Gotcha.
What is the appropriate time frame to return said plate to the owner?
I mean,
I think you can see where this is going.
Yeah, because I would say since you're walking distance neighbors,
yes,
that's got to be a quick turnaround.
Quick, right?
If it's something like for example, on my mom's birthday, we drove down to my parents' house, and they're still pretty strict with, like, you know, we want to keep distance, we don't want to do everything, but
right.
Like I made a cake for her, and I had a cake pan or whatever, right. Hand it off. I can understand this is going to take a while because I'm not traveling and
a little different.
Ask them to do stuff. So
this is someone I see like four times a day because she smokes, and I take the dog out in the backyard, so she's always out smoking with her dog. So I see her probably at least twice a day.
Mm-hmm. I would say you give, to be generous, a week. I mean, it should be returned in about 3 days because I figure day you get the food, you eat. Chance of there's leftovers. You don't want to be weird to kind of move it over to another plane, dirty two plates, so stay on that one. And by the second day, you should have taken off enough, even if there's food left, where you can put in like a small bowl or something like that.
Yeah, right.
So I would say by the third day, it should be clean and ready to go. But for to give like leeway, a week, I would say maximum.
Okay. So you're giving her a week, which I think is a pretty large leeway for me. I didn't give her a tray of food. I gave her a heaping plate. I would call it a heaping plate. Like a woman in her age and size, it was probably two meals for her. Like, you know, and eat and then finish the rest later at night while watching, I don't know, reruns. I assume old ladies watch. So
them old ladies, they don't like the new stuff.
Burl,
like,
I would
bunch of them ragtagged kids, get off my television with the MTV.
Like, I would agree with you, the 3 day period I think is more than enough. I think even a 3 day leave, you could leave the plate on the front stoop or something, you know, like if we don't see each other. Mm-hmm. So 3 days go by, 4 days go by, 5 days, et cetera, et cetera. A week goes by. No plate. And I'm like, all right. I'm like, Alex, I'm going to ask for the plate. I'm going to see her and I'm just going to kindly mention, where's the plate? You know, hey, can I get that plate back?
Out of curiosity, before you continue the story, are you one of those people that have like only four plates or you're always constantly washing it? Or is this where it's kind of leaning towards?
Well, no. I would say, you know, we have like one set of plates that's like nicer plates that we bring out every once in a while. And then we have one set of plates that's the everyday, you know, wear and tear. We've lost a couple over the years. They broke or whatever.
Some get chipped.
You know. So I would say we're down to probably six of these plates. And when they're in circulation and some are dirty, some of them are in the dishwasher, not a lot of plates, you know. Even though there's only two of us, you know, and then sometimes you place like chicken breast on the plate after you cook it. So you don't use that plate. You need two more, one for each other, you know?
Yep.
So now I'm kind of like nervous about like, how do I present the, can I get my plate back suggestion? Okay. Now, what would your approach? Would you just be straight up like, hey, yo, Marie, can I get that plate back? Or like, how would you pose that question?
What I would probably do, just like, let's say I was walking Obi, I see her outside, I would start like a conversation, you know, general back and forth and just kind of like in the middle, just go, oh, hey, are you done with that plate I gave you? We kind of need it back.
Yeah.
Something to that effect. Nothing nasty or whatever. Nothing where like, get it to me now or I'm going to get mad at you. Just something like, hey, if you know where it's at, you know, why don't let me know. Let's exchange back the where.
Yeah. I kind of did the same. I did the little talk. Hey, how's it going? Blah, blah, blah. Then I did. I dropped the little. Hey, Marie, how was the food the other night? Did you like the food the other night? And she's like, oh, it was so good. Thank you so much. Nothing. I was thinking that would jostle the, oh, I got to give you your plate back.
No.
Nothing.
No, I go straight question because if you start with like the food stuff or whatever, now you're slightly going into I'm going to guilt you kind of thing, which is not typically my style. It just, that's why it's just, hey, I hate to be rude kind of, do you have the plate? I kind of need it back.
Well,
and you can even joke about it. You know, me and a wife, we don't like washing dishes. So it's, it's a pain, you know, nothing where it like, you know, falls on you after you gave them charity. But at the same time, it's like, I'd really like it back.
So I did the follow-up questions after the food. My fault. Like, I forgot. Hey, can you just give me the plate? Like, can you just send me the plate back? Something like that. And she's like, oh. And at first, she gave me a look like I thought she was saying, like almost like saying with her eyes, like I didn't wash it yet or something like that. I'm like, okay. And then she tells me, Oh, I'll get. I don't know how you want me to give it to you. I haven't been feeling really well. How do you want me to give you the plate? So I'm sitting there like, hand it to me. I'm like, oh, no big deal. Just put it in a. Just give it to me. I'll throw it right in the dishwasher or put it in a plastic bag.
I prefer FedEx over UPS. But,
ship it next I'll leave door. It to you.
Why'd you ship it 3 to 5 days? What the hell?
That's a good experiment. If you ship it from your how long it takes to get to your neighbor.
It's got to take a full day because I'll have to bring it back, scan it, just to go, oh, crap, and turn around.
Yeah. So needless to say, no plate for the rest of the day. And this was during the day. So she tells me the plate, she's got a, you know, she's been sick, so maybe she'll get it to me. So that was 1 week into the process, Berlo. 1 week.
Okay.
Another full week goes by. Okay. So now we're talking, I want to get my dates correct. So the 26th till December 3rd, no plate. Okay, another week goes by. It is now December 8th. I have no plate. And now I'm starting to be like, I'd be talking to Alex. I'm starting to get like obsessive about it. She'd be like, she said, you know, you might just have to let the plate go and we'll just get another one. And I was like, no, you cannot let the plate go. It is our plate and she'll never get Thanksgiving dinner again from me. I was starting to get like obsessive where I'd go outside with the dog and kind of like look over, like waiting for a conversation to happen. And a lot of times she'd just be like turned smoking. Like, I'm wondering if she was trying to keep the plate secretly.
I mean, is it that nice of a place or something like a design on it or anything like
no,
that?
No, but it's part of my set of plates.
So
you're saying you would let the plate go. You would just be like, eh. I'm okay with it.
I mean, how much does the plate cost? $1.25?
No, it's probably like a $6-7 plate. It was from Crate and Barrel.
Oh, okay. So now you're saying it's a little special or decent. Okay.
Yeah.
Berlo,
it's not even call. The price I mean, of the plate. It's the purpose of the plate. It's the meaning that she didn't give me this plate back after I gave her a beautiful Thanksgiving dinner.
I mean, the way she's avoiding you, I kind of question if she, like, broke it or maybe, like somebody came over and she's like, oh, let me give you some leftovers, and she handed the plate to somebody else. That's my bet because, I mean, for it to go this long and you're just literally, like, across the street, I got to fathom something happens and she feels embarrassed to tell you and just figured you're just like, oh, well, it's a plate. But, I mean, I'll put it this way, if you start raising your voice and stuff, you'll never look like the good person in the end, no matter the fact that she's avoiding giving you your plate back.
So I didn't raise my voice. I didn't do any more confrontation. And I told you I was in a good mood at the beginning of the podcast because this morning in a plastic bag on my like brick entryway was the plate sitting in the plastic bag. A little weird, though. Hey. A little weird because I saw her before that. Didn't say, like, hey, I left the plate in the front yard. But the plate was sitting there, and all is well with the world. And my psychopath mind can calm down until I lend her something else.
I'm cold and lonely, and it's Christmas time. Too bad, plate holder. See, like, you should be on your front porch, like, just eating off that same plate. And all, I got family inside. Must be great, huh?
I should just guilted her, like have like 8 people over in the backyard for dinner, but like only have 7 plates and have a really sad 8th person that's not on to eat. So when she comes out and looks over, we're just missing the plate. I should chant like, give me a pee. Pee like really loudly over from my yard so she can hear it.
Maybe what you should do is like invite her over for like a picnic and like give everybody a nice plate, and then you just throw out the paper plate at her. Like Like, yeah. Not even like good paper plates, like the one where you need like four of them under it to hold anything.
All right.
That kind of deal.
Or next time I let her have food, I just go over with the food and just be like, open your hands and just slop it into her hands. And like, sorry, I need my plates.
You just walk over with like a ladle of soup. Here you go. Don't drop it. That's all you're getting.
Well, anyway, 2 weeks, way too long to return the plate. All right, Mike. Let's get to our guest today. This is a pretty cool one. So we've been getting a lot of, I guess, nostalgic voiceover people lately. This one, you kind of think back to that same era, and you've probably heard the NeverEnding Story theme song. You've probably sang it before. Still one of the saddest movies when that horse or whatever. What is the horse, right? That's going in the quicksand. Devastating when you're a kid. Devastating.
That kid just pulling the reins.
Yeah, that was that's a rough one. That's up there with Old Yeller, that part, you know.
It's almost funny, like, you look at what they consider PG movies now. It's like the Care Bears would be PG right now. Kids don't know the heartbreak. I hope you're going to prepare Shay. It's like, listen, you're going to see my childhood. You're going to toughen up with this one, kiddo.
First, we're starting with Bambi's mother getting shot. Then we're going to Old Yeller. And then we're going NeverEnding Story. All right, have fun at school, bud. But
Mr. Brennan, your child has been crying nonstop for 3 weeks now. We figured we'd want to ask you a couple questions.
Yeah. But we have the lead singer of Kaja Gugu. So you might know Too Shy, and he also did the theme song for NeverEnding Story, and he has a Christmas song coming out, so perfect timing getting Mr. Lamal on the show. So without further ado, here's our interview with Lamal.
How's that?
There you are.
Can you hear me?
I hear you.
You know, I was ready like 15 minutes ago, and then everything at the last minute went kind of crazy.
That's how it goes.
That's how it goes. Happy Sunday, guys.
Happy Sunday to you. Thank you. Thanks for joining us for a minute. That's Mike. I'm Scott. And starting off, you have a beautiful Christmas tree. That is.
Thank you. Yeah.
That is top notch.
It's kind of traditional to go for red, isn't it? But blue. I saw the blue in the store. I think we've had blue for like 5 years now. I like being different.
Well, it certainly works. It works. So Lamal, thanks for giving us some time here. I know you're a busy guy, and you're also across the pond. So finding a time that worked was a little interesting. So thank you for giving us a couple minutes. I guess we'll start with we've had a lot of artists, musicians, actors on during, this pandemic time. And we've been asking a lot of people how they've been kind of staying creative with live, at least in the States, live music is pretty much done right now. Acting is kind of shut down. How have you kept yourself creative, you know, during this pandemic?
Because of the TV show, the American TV shows using my old music last year, it kind of encouraged me to plan. I was planning my first release in many years, actually, in March. Then the pandemic came, but everything was already done. The video was recorded, the track was done, all the machinery was set up.
Right.
Radio pluggers and promotion and stuff. And I was kind of, that was a single, it was a digital release, it was a self-release. And I've just been on social media for 3 years. So the whole thing's been kind of experiment and falling in the pandemic year, which weirdly. But the single got such great responses, Still in Love, that was the song, that it kind of encouraged me to think about recording other things. And then the pandemic happened, and to answer your question, I kind of sat around twiddling my thumbs, all gigs cancelled,
right.
no trips anywhere, Normally, I'm traveling certainly all over Europe, if not further afield, because, you know, Too Shy, Never Any Story with global hits. And there I was, you know, just going. Weirdly, you know, kind of the irony is because of the pandemic, I was able to revisit this Christmas song, which I wrote 8 years ago.
Oh, okay.
And then and I don't want to preempt your question because you're probably going to get to that, but it's been a weird year, of course, like for me, like for everyone. Staying safe was my big priority because I'm 62 next week.
62. You don't look. You don't. God, 62. Jesus, you look great.
Thank you. You know, I used to work in nightclubs from 18 to 22. Very smoky back then. You know, smoking was allowed.
Yep.
I smoked cigarettes until I was about 40. Kind of a social smoker, but you know, sometimes I do like 30 cigarettes a week or something. I gave up 20 years ago, but you don't know, you know, how this COVID thing is going to affect you. So that's been my priority, really. Stay safe. Try and get through this. I brought my lovely 82-year-old mother down from the north to stay with me and my partner. She was here for 10 weeks. That was interesting. You know, two people who have got more idiosyncrasies than... You know, mum wants to cut the avocado one way and I want to cut it another. And, you know, we were driving each other crazy, but it was born out of love. You know?
Yeah.
When you first started, for what I've read up, you had, you started in like acting. I was just kind of curious, was music always in the background or did music kind of find you in a way that made you pursue that career a little more?
Okay. It's interesting, that question. I've had it before. I did so little acting. To answer your question, it wasn't the main thing for me. Mm-hmm. I was driven by music. You know, I was the kid at school with a radio. I was the kid at the youth club who bought the records and became the sort of self-appointed DJ. And I'm still that guy, you know. I hear a song and I'm like, oh, what is that lyric? Google it. Who produced this? I'm sure this was written and was released 10 years earlier. I'm Googling it. I'm still crazy and driven by music, but I did dabble back into acting last October. I did a play on the London Fringe, what you Americans call off-Broadway. Off-Broadway is the best anyway, you know? The fringe stuff can be really edgy and provocative. And the play was called Earthquakes in London. I had a medium-sized part. And I was more terrified performing to 100 people in a play than I would be singing to 10,000 at a music event, you know.
Yeah.
It was crazy. But just to sum up on acting, you know, I would never flippantly say, oh, yeah, I'm an actor, you know. I think it's an amazing discipline. It's completely different to music. I admire actors so much more after, you know, I've just been retraining for 3 years. And it's all encompassing, you know, the people who make it look easy. And can I recommend a movie? You probably watched it already. I can't believe, I'll recommend two, actually. I can't believe that I've only just seen this. I didn't even know about it. But, you know, we have so many choices in the world now.
Yeah.
But last night I watched with my partner The Bucket List with Jack Nicholson.
It's a good movie. Mm.
You guys seen that?
Yes. Yeah. Years ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 2008 it came out. I was shocked.
Yeah. It's a bit... You're a little late on that.
But it stands up. It stands up.
It's a great movie.
It still stands up.
Yeah,
very
and
good.
And the other one is Uncle Frank.
Never heard of that one.
Mm. No, Uncle don't Frank. Think I have.
Who's
Check
in that,
it out.
Who's in that one?
Okay, that's a good question. Anyone famous? Let me think. Oh, boy.
give it a Google.
I can't remember. I don't think there's anyone. It's one of them lovely low-budget films.
Yeah.
It just made a big impact, and it's been nominated for some awards.
All right. We'll check it out for sure.
Yeah, I think I saw it on... Oh, is it an Amazon original? Oh, I can't remember. Mm-hmm. Uncle Frank, anyway.
All right.
The only name I could find is Paul Bettany, who played Jarvis in the Marvel movies.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
Yeah, he's in it. And the director's quite known. He did a big series in America, but we didn't get it here, so I can't remember the title.
So let me ask you, I'm always fascinated by musicians, like their approach to songwriting. Are you a guy who can write lyrics first? Are you a guy who has to work out a tune and apply his lyrics to it? Like, what is your, and has your approach changed? I mean, I was just, looking back, it's hard to believe, Too Shy came out in 1983. You got a long span of music. Has your musical approach changed over the years also?
Yeah, I guess so. But in another sense, it hasn't, because it's such an organic thing. In the old days, I used to carry a pen and paper around with me and just write things down. If I saw something, thought of something, heard something. Sometimes people might say something in a conversation, and a bell goes ding, a phrase, a very small phrase.
Right.
I write titles down all the time. I still do. I've got a long note on my smartphone that says song titles or lyrics,
mm-hmm.
phrases. Sometimes they get translated into a song. Sometimes they don't. Often they do. And they'll come in useful, because I'm planning an album next year, but we can get to that. I remember before I even learned the piano, having song ideas in my head. I think I was so obsessed with music as a kid, from the age of about 12, obsessing about, I often hear that authors, writers, were obsessed about other books, and that kind, inspired them. And it's the same, actors are inspired by other actors. So I was very much inspired by, I was driven, I was so driven about songs and music. And Stevie Wonder once said, it can come from something as in like a rhythm, as simple as a rhythm.
Yeah.
And next thing you're singing along. That's why there's no bottle formula. And I know it's a cliche, and we've all heard it said before, but if there was a bottle formula for a hit record,
every way we do it.
Yep.
Yeah. So I often say we're like the people you see on a beach with a metal detector looking for treasure. We are digging for treasure, and you just looking around, you try this, try that, layer it with that, and then you go, oh, that's interesting. And these days there's so much competition, you've got to really dig, unless you get really lucky, which, We've got a century of lyrics in popular music and melody, And we've all seen there's a lot of court cases, lawsuits. You write a melody, and then, it's tricky. It's very tricky.
I'm sure. Yeah.
So always you stole that from my song back in 1962.
Kind of. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, didn't Marvin Gaye's estate sue somebody recently? And I think there was a $5 million out of court settlement. And you know the expression, right? Where there's a hit, there's a writ.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, what made you go with a stage name instead of your regular name when you started performing?
I don't mind my real name, Chris. But I just thought it was the thing to do. You know, I mean, I go right back to Ethel Gum, who became Judy Garland, or, you know, Reginald Dwight, who became Elton, or Anna Mae Bullock, who became Tina Turner.
Right.
I just thought that's what you had to do. And I was quite impressed with the idea of Sting's name from The Police. I just thought that's really cool because it's one word and it's not really a name, you know, like a nickname or something. So then I was an ABBA fan. ABBA were huge in the UK, much bigger than the States. I know they're known there now, right?
Oh,
yeah, absolutely.
The music or the movie. But so they, and I read how they got their name, you know, Agnetha, Benny, Bjorn, Anna, Frieda. And I thought, oh, that's interesting, playing around with the letters of your names. So I looked at my surname, Hamill, swapped the letters around, said Lamal. Ooh, you know, that sounds exotic. I think I was trying to be as far away from, you know, my working class background as I could possibly be. you arrive in London as an 18-year-old from this small town up north. And it's just, it dazzles you, you know, and you get crazy ideas.
So let me ask you, how were you approached with the never-ending story? Were you asked to write, you know, were they give it, did you give, they give you a summary of the movie and they were asking you to write it, or did you write the song prior and it just fit? Like, how were you approached with that?
Well, first of all, I didn't write Neverending Story.
Oh, okay.
But, I sang it, and you know, I got the call from Giorgio Moroder, the producer. Well, he called, you know, they called my manager, but it would be, to work with Giorgio Moroder would be like working with David Foster, or, you know, if you're an actor, you get a call from Spielberg,
right,
or something.
Right.
You know, it was, I knew exactly who Giorgio was. I was a big fan of his work. And I knew all the Donna Summer hits and everything. And I'd gone to Tokyo, to the Tokyo Music Festival. EMI Records asked me to go to promote my first solo single after the band split. The song was called Only for Love. And while I was there, Giorgio Moroder was there. But I want to give credit here to my manager of the time, a feisty Irish guy called Billy Gaff. And Billy was one of those kind of entrepreneurial managers, a real personality, a feisty... The short ones are always feisty. You know, like the little dogs that make, they always make the most noise. Yak, yak, yak. But, you know, Billy Gaff, well, I had managed Rod Stewart through his heyday, and he was just a character. He had a lot of stories and anecdotes. And he went to dinner with Giorgio in Tokyo. Now, I know Billy. I can just imagine him at the dinner saying to Giorgio that Lamal's going to be the next best thing since sliced bread, and you should work with him, you know. Billy had previously been an insurance salesman, so, you know, he had some salesman's sales skills. So, but anyway, we got back to the UK, and I got the call, and that's how it came about. I flew to Munich to try my voice. That's what I was offered, the chance to try my voice. I didn't just outright get the gig, you know. I went to Munich and spent a day. We did it in a day, and I came back the next day, and then a couple of days later I got the call to say he likes the voice on the track, and the rest, as they say.
Yeah. I was going to say, you must be doing something right, because I with that song, because I opened Spotify and it's Never Ending Story, 51 million streams. Never Ending Story, the 12-inch, 4 million streams. Never Ending Story, 500,000. All, you know, there are five different versions of them with, you know, over, I do quick math, 60 million streams just on Spotify. So something is still magical about that song all these years later.
Well, you know, if you're a singer and you get to work with, you know, just let's go back to the 60s. If you're a singer and you get signed by Motown, you'll have a Motown sound, you know?
Right.
Yes, of course, you've got your voice. If you get signed by TSOP, the Sound of Philadelphia, the label out of Philadelphia, you'll sound like TSOP a little bit, you know?
Right.
And in the UK, we had a big production team called PWL, Pete Waterman, Stock Aitken and Waterman. There were these three guys. They ruled the charts for about 5 years in the late 80s with Kylie Minogue. And they did an album, Donna Summer. This time I know it's for real. Top five in America, I think. Rick Astley, of course. They did Rick Astley. Mm-hmm. But if you'd have worked with PWL, you know, you would have sounded a little bit like PWL. So there I was working with Giorgio. And, of course, he brings his personality to the recording. And that's not a bad thing.
No, you
know?
No,
not at all. I don't know. With that, the 80s and everything going on with MTV, I always like to ask artists, what was harder back then, making a good song or making a good music video?
Oh, it's got to be song. You know, it's got to be song. I mean, the song is the first thing. What's the... We have an expression. Well, I've heard it in the music business a few times. You can't polish a turd. You heard that one?
Yep. We have that in the States too. Yep.
Yeah.
That's what they say podcast. You know, so. We've been trying to polish this turd for 7 years.
I'm sure that's not true, but you know, if you've got if it's not in the groove, if it ain't there, you know, no great video is going to make that much difference. I think, you know, it's got to be in the groove really to start with. So I'd say, obviously, it's music first. Mm. But, you know, videos were new back then. And it was exciting to suddenly have this other creative outlet, you know. But of course, you sit down, you're all excited. As a new band, I remember we were so excited about making a video. We'd sit down with the director who brings in a storyboard and the budget's £30,000. Wow. And then you only find out like 2 years later, you paid for that. that £30,000 went on your debit.
Yeah. So what was it like?
That's why we have no royalties.
Yeah, right. You
know, we spent them all along the way.
So I thought it was pretty cool that you also recently, just last year, you got a chance to be on American Horror Story, which is, you know, very unique. And, you know, that show is constantly changing every year. How did that come about? And what was that experience like? It's pretty cool.
Now, I had nothing to do with it. You know, when a song is out there, it's like a tree. The branches just go off, you know,
right.
And it's got its own life. So every major record company and music publisher has the department called synchronization, sync for short. So S-Y-N-C-H.
Right.
And, The company that wants to use the music will call the synchronization department that own the master rights. And that's how it's worked out. And they don't need my permission. If somebody at the other side of the world wants to use, you know, Never Any Story was used in the Swedish National Lottery, for example. Too Shy was used in a mobile phone commercial, in TV commercial in France.
Right.
You know, they just go off and do all these crazy things. So I didn't know anything about it until my 21-year-old nephew, who watches American Horror Story. I know of the show, but I don't watch it. And he puts his video on his phone, and he's getting to the scene where I'm just about to get killed, but he doesn't know it's going to happen. He hits record and he's freaking out. And then he sends me this video by WhatsApp, and it was just so good, his reaction. And he gave me permission to put it on my social media because he's going, "Oh my God, they're going to kill you." Oh. And he's effing, "Oh my effing God, they're going to kill you." So it was brilliant. And I knew it was important when the 21-year-olds think their uncle is cool again.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. That's awesome.
So that was great. You know, I mean, to be in the storyline, not just use the music and have an actor playing me. somebody on a few people on social media said, "Hey, Lamar, they should have used you." I said, "Yeah, but I'm not 22 anymore, guys."
Right. That's pretty cool.
Just out of curiosity, what is the like current relationship with the band Kachigugu? Because I know you guys split up for a while and you've had some sporadic coming back and forth on it. What's the current relationship like?
It's kind of non-existent, really. You know, if you split up with someone, a lover or husband or wife, and the divorce is, shall we say, not completely amicable, you usually don't speak, right?
Right.
Even if there's kids involved, there's very little. So the child of our marriage was Too Shy, of course, and that one album. And I'm proud of that. And I think it's an important legacy. We've all moved on. You know, we're all doing different things. It's easier for me as the singer, the voice on the record, to kind of still be strongly associated with Too Shy and the White Feathers album for obvious reasons. Right. You know, it's my voice there. People are listening to the voice, the lyrics, like singing along, whatever. But I only look back with, there were so many good memories that far outweigh the slightly negative ending, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm.
I just smile about it because even now, 37 years later, Too Shy has this wonderful effect on my life. You know, it's the reason, it's one of the reasons the phone keeps ringing to do live performances.
Right. Yeah.
And of course, the royalty checks are quite nice.
I'm sure that doesn't hurt. So let's go to the present. You just released One Wish for Christmas, a single, your latest release. And now you said earlier in the interview that you had wrote that 8 years ago or something like that, or quite a while back. Tell us about that song and what the reception for that song's been, and when did you put it out and all that fun stuff.
So as a songwriter, I had two things on my bucket list, which was to write a song about Christmas, to write a song about London. London, because I love London. I've lived there most of my adult life. I've got lots of important memories. And I see all these songs about New York, about Paris, San Francisco, not that many about London. And I love kind of some of the old jazz songs. And the Christmas songs I really like are like the sort of the classic standard American songbook type. So that was kind of what I wanted to do. And using London in a modern day setting allowed us to enter the Christmas, you know, which has been, as you know, everybody sang about chestnuts and mistletoe and Santa and snowmen. So it originally it was London for Christmas. And in the pandemic year, I thought about all these things in the lyrics that we can't do this year, you know, go to the theater and cocktail bar and shopping and a boat trip on the Thames, all these lovely things that our romantic couple are going to do. And then I thought, wow, you know, that's quite an important lyric this year. I'm twiddling my thumbs, nothing to do, rang up the co-writers and said, look, guys, let's revisit the production and just see what happens. And that was it. And during the process of reproducing the music, I got the lyric change for the chorus just popped into my head one morning lying in bed, as you do. it just felt right. And the minute I thought of it, One Wish for Christmas, I thought, oh, that's nice. You know, it's almost as a songwriter that you kind of recognize those moments where you, I mean, I remember right when I first started, sorry if I'm rambling.
I met the
jazz pianist and singer from the Savoy Hotel in London 8 years ago, and he happened to live around the corner in North London. So we got together for the songwriting session, and I forgot the point I was going to make now, but no, I can't remember what I was going to say. Never mind. Brain freeze. Sorry.
No problem.
It'll come back to me.
Yeah. So you released a song, a couple weeks ago, correct?
Yeah.
November 13th. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, I think I was talking about the pandemic year. So we revisited the song and the lyric change came and it, as I say, it just felt right. And then there were a lot of hurdles. I really didn't think it was going to happen. The producer, Ian Curno, and co-writer, he couldn't find the files from 8 years ago in June. I contacted him in June. And then, you know how software and platforms, the technologists move so fast now. Well, he didn't have to update. He had to backdate to get the files to work on the platform he was on at the moment. So he couldn't do it in June, and he couldn't do it in July, and he couldn't do it in August. And by the time we get to September, I thought, well, this is just not going to happen, right? You know, this year. And then he found the files and the thing. Then there was the lyric change. Then I had to re-sing it. Then a second lockdown came in the UK, and there were problems trying to organize the video shoot. Check out the video if you haven't seen it. It's really lovely dancing.
Yeah, I watched it right before this, actually.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
It's nice, isn't it? The dancing's. I love dancing.
Now, do you feel like a different feeling when it's a Christmas song versus a regular song, considering it's like highly associated with like a special time of year, or is it just like another project?
I'd say it felt special. You know, I think Christmas is a special time. I think, you know, in the Northern Hemisphere, in a 6 month winter, it's just something to help us get through it, isn't it? It's a time to get together with a family. I mean, I'm not religious. It's just people are in a good mood.
Yeah.
You know,
we
put colored lights and I'm not really keen on all the rubbish that people buy and give away as gifts. I mean, just in terms of environment, it just feels like a waste, you know. I saw a fantastic graffiti somewhere, and it said, "That's right, buy some more shit, then we're all fucked."
That's awesome.
You know, yeah. But you know, so I have a rule with my family. I say, you know, because you know, I'm of a certain age where. Now, where, you know, we've all done it, where you open that gift and you go, oh, that's so nice. And then they turn around and you go. and then you take it to the charity shop in January, or you sell it on eBay. So I just said to my friends, don't buy me anything. Let's just get together and have a drink, some food, conversation. Right. And with my immediate family, so we have something to unwrap. My rule has been for a few years, nothing over £5. You know,
right.
I don't care if it's a box of crackers, a biscuit, you know, cookies or tea, you know, whatever, just something that will get used. Otherwise it's just a waste.
Yeah.
So, but I think I've increased it to £10. So.
Inflation.
Inflation.
Lamal, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. Really cool talking to you, and it's cool to see you still working, still putting out new content. For fans listening to this and checking out, what do you have on the horizon? I know you had mentioned you're gonna do another album, and where's the best place for people to go check out all things you're up to?
Okay, on the internet, just go to lamal.com, LIMAHL, Lamal. And you can connect with me there on social media, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You can link to the music, the videos. So, yeah, that's next year, fingers crossed and toes for 2021. I want to do a new album and just kind of see where this goes. simply because the responses to the two songs have been so overwhelmingly brilliant, really. Kind of really encouraged me, because, you know, you get to 62 and it's such a youthful business and you think, nah, no one's going to care.
Right.
It hasn't been like that at all. I'm just getting so much love at the moment. So yeah, you know, why not?
Absolutely.
Awesome. Final question. What is cooler? Somebody using your music in like a movie or a TV show, or the fact that there's an X-Men character based off of your hairstyle?
Well, I'd probably make more money if it's used in the music. So I'll go with that.
There's no such thing as hairstyle royalties? Come on.
Hello? And you thought the one guy that might have done that would have been Trump, but he's going now. So.
Probably the first would have been Jennifer Aniston. Everybody wearing that hairstyle, but you were the originator.
You can always grow it back. You can always grow it back.
Don't make suggestions like that. You know, the thing is, right, they do say the mullet, because that's what we called it over here. That style was called the mullet.
Right.
And there's even a book. There's a book called The Mullet. There was all these famous people that had that hair, you know, versions of that hairstyle. And there were like famous tennis players and there was all sorts. And it looks good on young people. You know, now it's kind of cool. It's like somebody new now doing kind of an 80s vibe musically. That's great on young people. But if I do 80s music, it's like I'm stuck in the past. Right. If I wear a mullet, it's like I'm stuck in the past. So I don't know.
That's all right.
Watch this.
Thank you so much for your time, Lamal. And have a Merry Christmas and good luck with the single. And whatever you're doing, you're still the youngest looking 6-year-old I've ever seen in my life. So keep that up. And thanks so much, man.
It's the rock and roll lifestyle or something. Thanks, guys. Yeah, all the best for Christmas. And see you in 2021, hopefully.
But let's get to a guest here. Actually, two guests. Let's get to two guests. So coming on the show, it's Christmas season, Berlew, and we're getting excited for our Christmas episode, which is next week, our official Christmas episode, but we have a little holiday tinge to our show today.
We're pre-holidaying. It's Hanukkah today. So. Yeah.
I mean, I think in the past we've released two Christmas episodes in 1 year. I know we've done Halloween. I'm not sure if we've done Christmas, but...
We've done two-parters.
And... we have a really great Christmas guest for next week. That's a little tease. Really, really relevant Christmas guest that you have probably seen many, many, many times on Christmas Day. It's not Santa.
Is it me?
No. But in the past, we've had Santa. We've had Reindeer Farm. We had Ian Petrella from Christmas Story. We've had a Rockette.
Santa himself.
We had Santa himself on the show. But today, we're going to bring on two friends that... I've always been really good dudes in the comedy world. We've kind of come up together and performed together, and they've been on the podcast before. But they came together to write a Christmas book that has a couple really nice messages in it. And I'm very proud of our friends for doing it. So we're going to bring on Joe Carney and Mr. Natty Bumpercar on the podcast to talk about their book, Douglas. So without further ado, here they are. Well, first off, gentlemen, we'll get to that, Natty. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
So I want to welcome our good friends from, I guess you could call it the Jersey comedy scene, if you will. Both also former guests on this show at one point or the other. Going back, I don't even know, 5 years now, 4 or 5 years. Natty came to my house one time and... my dog really, really enjoyed Natty, maybe a little too much. And then Joe Carney, who we interviewed him and his improv partner, if you will, Big Rich McDonald. So I'd like to welcome Joe and Natty back to the podcast. Guys, how are we doing?
Thank you for having us, man. I love it. A nice return engagement.
That's it.
I'm so happy to be here, too. How's Obi?
Obi's good, man. He's getting a little older, a little fatter, but, you know, he's still trucking. He's like all of us.
Hey. Who isn't?
Shut up now. All right.
So
I was waiting for him to say, I said Obi, not Joby.
Ah. So the reason we bring Natty and Joe back on the show is not just to catch up and say hi and see their beautiful faces. Well, we'll get into it, but recently the two of them combined forces to create a new book for the holidays entitled Douglas, which Mike is holding up a copy right now. Natty was holding up a copy just 2 seconds ago. Mike's copy looks better for some reason, but and Joe is reaching for his copy right now. So we got the trifecta. I do not have my copies yet. However, Natty, we're arranging that. But boys, so I guess Joe, I got to start with you. Tell us where the genesis of this whole idea came from.
So I've always wanted to write something. I just didn't know what it was.
Yeah, you tried jokes for a little bit. You tried jokes.
Yeah. That, and we all know that didn't work. So I had to move on to something else.
Nice cup of coffee.
Hold on. Okay, go ahead.
I should have used Trumbull. We had So 2 years ago, my wife Kathleen gave me a gift for Christmas, and it was a leather bound notebook and an expensive pen. And she said, "You always wanted to write something, so write something." She said, "I got in touch with a guy who does editing and publishing, and he's going to help you once you're ready to do it." So it sat there under the Christmas tree for a couple months. And I just started writing. I didn't really know what I wanted to write. I was going to write stories about my mother and growing up, based on some of the jokes that I tell. You know, they're good stories. I didn't know if they're going to translate.
Right.
And I just kept going back to like little memoirs, and it was based on me growing up. Like I had a very different childhood. No more different or difficult than any other kid, but I just kept going back to the stories and not fitting in. You know, I had a lot of ear surgeries when I was growing up. I had about 12 surgeries, and I was different. I was kind of cast aside, and I was talking to my wife about Christmas trees, and we were going to get a new one for the next year. And I was like, you know, all the different things you base it on. And I just gave this tree a personality. So we're going back probably a year and a half ago. And I just started writing things down about being on the farm and, you know, people judging him based on what he looked like and making, you know, assumptions that he was no good because he was different. And it just rolled into a story a little bit at a time. And I added some stuff, put some things, took some things out. And next thing you know, I had like, quite a few pages written, and it made sense, and it was a good story. And I let my wife read it, and she cried. I said, "Whoa, I think I
nailed
it."
Was that bad, huh?
I gave it to my sister.
I gave you a leather bound book for this.
I still have the receipt. I still have the receipt.
And then, when it was all done, and I spoke to the editor, he said it was an absolutely printable worthy book that he thought was actually well done. He said, "You should probably find an artist." So I looked everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I swear to God, I made one phone call. I said, "I got it." And I sent it over to him, and he cried. And I said, I want you to see if you can bring this guy to life. So he drew a couple of different versions of what he thought he looked like. And when he sent that over, that was like the fifth or sixth version. I said, "Here we go. That's it." And then he just started putting a storyboard together. And I wanted it out last Christmas. And it just, timing didn't work. Natty had so many things going on. It just didn't work. And then I was getting upset. And my wife said, "Everything's going to happen for a reason." And I'm so glad that I didn't push any of the talent and artwork that Natty came up with, and rush anything because it was really worth the wait. I think it's a great book.
Now, Natty, were you aware of Joe's story or at least the premise of it when he called you, or was it just totally fresh when he called you up to get this done?
I don't even think he called me. I just think he texted me and he said, I wrote a book. You're going to draw pictures for it. And then I sent back some weird emoji or something. And then that's how it started. Joe and I don't really talk on the phone so much because I get scared. And or maybe I sent a weird like little animated like GIF or whatever.
You did, I think you sent me an ice cream cone, a dragon, and a kitty cat face or something. Like
yeah,
that.
I think. Yeah, I mean,
that means yes. That means yes, yeah. And Natty.
That's yeah. A legal bound contract in most states. So
I'm a visual person, so I tend to send stuff like that. Words are
Coffee
cards.
Can Alley. That means yes. That is a valid contract. Coffee Can Alley.
Right.
Signed I love book. That you, Joe. You slipped in there that you had this leather bound book that she gave you, and it was under the tree for a couple of months.
That's what I heard. I heard that too. I was thinking very Whiskey Tango white trash tree being up for a couple of months.
See, I was wondering why you didn't jump on that, because I know you have a real thing about wreaths being out in front of people's houses.
I do. I call January 20th White Trash Appreciation Day. It's where you can identify all your white trash neighbors.
What is January 20th? What is that?
I feel
day?
Like it's just it's a way long enough deadline to get the Christmas stuff down. It's just an arbitrary number.
I should say it sat in a box, my gift box, but it probably we take it down.
We know.
So, New Year's Day.
St. Patrick's Day. We got it.
No one's judging. Yeah, and the way he takes it down on St. Patrick's Day is he falls down the stairs. Tree's down.
Catch me, tree! Save me, Douglas!
took out Douglas on St. Patrick's Day.
That's a sequel.
So, we have friends of ours that we went there on the week after Valentine's Day, and it was still up.
That's too long, wow. Man. I feel like having it up too long makes Christmas less special. That smaller time frame, that right time frame to have the decorations up makes it a really
too
special.
Too early and too late, it ruins it.
Exactly.
Yep, too early, up too early, down too late.
Yeah, I mean, like Mike has his Christmas tree up like the day football starts.
No. That's like,
no.
We made a deal like this year I allowed her to do early. She did right after Halloween, and for the premise of okay, it's 2020, I can't push this argument for 2020. But other years there have been a kind of polar side, like look,
wait
okay.
A second, you've been down south for what, a year now? A little over a year?
Left years? In 2018.
Okay, so it's 2 years for you to take on the southern gentleman of you allowed her.
Wasn't going to say anything about that. Yeah.
No, there's some things I'm allowed to do. There's some things she's allowed to do. That's our conversations. It's like, she's like, I want, it's more in the line of when I mean allow is in, I have to go up into the attic and grab this stuff. Right. So it's like one of those, all right, you got to coerce me into the deal. So
recently also,
she's not running up into the attic and grabbing this stuff. Okay. I'm the one that's tumbling down the flight of stairs.
Which Minnie Mouse outfit does she wear to entice you to do this?
I mean, there's like 20 of them, so it's hard to say. It's the one with the dots.
Okay,
does that ring a bell?
Yeah.
I've had the conversation. It's like, babe, I know how sentimental you are with the holidays, but there's a point.
You recently allowed her to eat breakfast and go outside recently too. You're evolving.
Well, it was her birthday. What can I tell you?
That's... So wait, did she go outside to use the bathroom? Because I know about the outdoor plumbing in Georgia.
Well, I mean, I give her a shovel and I say you can walk a mile. I may allow you to wear shoes tonight, babe. Wow. I'm nice. If I'm nice,
you say, Daddy needs a new trough outside. Go start digging.
So yeah, I mean, good Governor Kemp likes to push the caveman rules, so I'm only happy to oblige.
You're a good citizen is what you're saying. Now, Natty, so people who are listening, Natty, you're a comic, but you're also you're an artist, and I believe you've been an artist for a lot longer than comedy, dating back quite a long time. Can you give a little background into like your art or when you started really kind of drawing? And I know you have a... if people know Natty or look on, he's a very specific style and almost like a signature style. Like, did it take you a long time to develop? Were you dabbling in like realism for a while? Were you ever, or was it always kind of a cartoon, simplistic kind of thing?
Yeah,
give us a little insight into that.
So I have a bachelor's of art and painting and a master's of fine art and painting. And I've been doing that stuff for like 30 years. Wait, really? Is that true? Jesus. Uh-huh. Yeah, 30 years. But it's funny because in art and in comedy, people are always talking about like, you know, you have to find your voice, you have to find your style or whatever.
Right.
And this just kind of always made sense to me. It's kind of, yeah, it's cartoony, but it's kind of a little bit, you just said the word and I forgot it. On the side of trains.
Realistic.
No, on the side of subway trains. Oh, graffiti.
Graffiti-like.
Yeah. So kind of like graffiti, kind of outsider art, cartoony, all that stuff. So, yeah, now, always really colorful. And
now, was your background, were you a kid who was just like always doodling or like drawing, or was this something that hit you later in life?
No, I was always making stuff, writing stuff, drawing stuff, doodling stuff, forever. But it's funny because a lot like the comedy world, when I was in high school in art class, the stuff I like, they would give you assignments and I would make stuff. And the teacher was just like, well, this isn't art. This isn't, it's kind of like, oh, this isn't comedy. What you're doing doesn't count. And so I've had that my entire life.
Well, she was a math teacher, so I don't
know. No, I went to a Catholic school, and so I wasn't painting the saints, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I would like make all this stuff, and I was like, look what I made. And she was like, ugh, and walk away. And I was like, this is fun. Yeah, but I just kind of always do what I do. I don't know.
It's funny. And when I was in middle school, I was in art G&T. Ironically, I can't draw anymore at all. But like, it was like a gifted and talented thing. You would go, and I literally started hating it because they'd be like, okay, now this is exactly what you need to draw and exactly how you need to draw. And I just started using it as an excuse to like skip class and go walk around. It just completely turned me off to it. And I like stopped drawing. Like after seventh grade, I didn't draw anything.
Isn't that weird?
Yep.
Yeah. Well,
don't you think when you look at Natty's stuff, like especially in this book, obviously, because that's what I've been looking at so much, it is like, it is so far in two different directions. It's like it's almost childish and juvenile, which brings kids in, but it is so hard to perfect it, and he nails it.
Yeah. I've always liked Natty's style. It's very him. Like he's able to translate whatever that personality is, which you can't explain, into the artwork, which I think is very cool.
I will say though that when I was in art school initially, like the first couple of years, it's a lot of process stuff and a lot of what you were talking about. You hated, I hated it too. And like in college, teachers would yell at you, and like it was not fun. But so I have a background in all that stuff, so I could do that stuff. But, you know, that was like the almost artisan stuff, which is like you're making stuff, but it doesn't necessarily have a lot of heart or whatever. Mm-hmm. Very draftman and all that stuff. But then as soon as I could, I kind of transitioned over to this stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
When you're doing the art for the book, I'm just kind of curious, was there ever a point where like with some of the drawings where maybe you thought about changing like on the story side, or some of what Natty brought up, things where like maybe we can tweak this in some way, or did it kind of stay right and generally with what was produced?
The most important thing to me, there was two specific pictures that I wanted Natty to nail that we talked about incessantly. Natty came over, he brought his son over he and my son ate ice cream sandwiches on the couch. Remember that night, Natty? And I just said, I, when the other animals stop by the farm and they're picking on him, I want the look on his face to be utter pain, but with a smile on his face that he just doesn't understand why anybody could be that mean. And he nailed it. Right. It was a couple days later, and he sent it over to me, and it was just something that it was like he was able to take googly eyes and a Christmas tree and express an emotion when they're picking on him. You see that? It's just like I don't know. It was just something about it, like the look on his face, the innocence, the little bit of pain that people are picking on him, and the desire to never change who he was. Natty did that in two googly eyes, a smirk, and a Christmas tree. And it was just, I mean, I've seen a lot of art in my life, and I know, I think it's hard to capture in any type of facial expression. And it was so incredible to me.
Yep. Now, Joe, you've dabbled in a whole lot of improv before, and you've done stand up before. And I'm curious, as far as when it came to sitting down and writing an actual story with a start and a finish and a plot, and did you find a hard time keeping it like I guess focusing and writing in one path? Like how long did this take you to really kind of craft and figure out the whole story?
So I was working nights twice a week at the American Dream, the Meadowlands that they just turned into the Inside Water Park. And
Great Comedy Club.
Mega Mall.
Great Comedy Club.
Great Comedy Club. So I had temporary water overnights twice a week, besides working my regular hours there. And there, you know, you would walk your rounds, make sure everything was okay. And there was a lot of downtime, So as I sat there, I was there for 10 hours. And it was just, I don't know how to put it. I was alone. There was no other distractions. There was nothing, you know, if I sat at home and I tried to do it, I would do something with the kids or play with the dog or talk to my wife or answer the phone or check the TV. It was the most perfect opportunity for me. And it was sent to me. I know that it was to just concentrate on how to get that story to make sense. And there were some things in there that I didn't include that I had to go back and put in, like when the birds and the squirrels stop by and they're picking on the story they were just talking about, that wasn't in there, you know. And the editor said to me, why is he upset? What's wrong with him? You know, what really gets him besides being so different? And I went back and added that and tweaked it a little bit. But as far as starting from the beginning and getting to that end, I didn't know how I wanted it to end. I didn't know, what is the lesson here? Was the lesson going to be that, you know, he stayed on the farm that night and nobody came to get him and he knew that he did the best that he could? Or was the lesson that someone would come and get him just for being himself, you know? And there were two different endings. There was an alternate ending, I guess, for another version of it.
The next book.
On the next book. there was one, I had an ending where Santa Claus was going to land. You know, was Santa Claus going to land and talk to him? I thought that was a little hokey. Not that, you know, a kid's book doesn't need to be hokey. It right. was, yeah. You know, it seemed cliched to me and every, you know. So I guess there were several different ways I wanted to end it. But then I, knowing that he was different, knowing that he had so many aspects of his own physical being that were different than every other tree on the farm, to be accepted by a family and brought in and put up on Christmas Eve and fit so perfectly in that corner, you know, just made all the sense in the world.
Now, all of us have done like stand up. Joe, you do a lot of improv, you too, Natty. And with everything that you've done, like with this getting published out, is there like a different like kind of feeling of success with this versus having a good night on stage?
Joe's still working for that. He's still going.
It could happen.
I'm still chasing that high. Well, I called Natty the other night. Natty, you want to tell him? You want me to tell him?
You tell him.
You don't remember.
He said you never call him. So he probably just texted back with some weird gifts, and he's like, okay.
You tell him.
That's like if my wife ever asked me, she's like, "Do you know that thing?" And I'm like, "You know, I don't know. It's like, I'm a goldfish."
The sheer look of anxiety on Natty's face for that split second was fantastic. You tell him.
Only. I want honest answers only. Did you guys read the reviews on Amazon of this book? Did you read?
I have not. I'm waiting to get my copy.
I've read the book.
It's okay. No. It's okay. So I called Natty after I read them. I think there's 10 up there right now. And it was people that I don't know. And it was, they have special needs children and they have their special needs teachers. And they expressed in the reviews what it meant to them and how special it was and how it touched their kids and how it touched their family. And I was like, I called Natty and I said, of all the jokes, of all the things I've ever done, of all the personal things that I've tried to do, this is the most wonderful feeling I've ever had to accomplish this and to see that I actually did something. Natty and I did something that touched people in a way that was beautiful.
Awesome.
It meant something to people and touched their heart and their kids felt something that I never had the opportunity to do that for a child before in the past, and it really made me feel complete, if that makes sense.
Now, Joe, I was saying you grew up kind of different, or you had things that maybe you were picked on or whatnot, and I was wondering, did you, like, a lot of times, like, people who go through that kind of almost realize it, like, or learn how to deal with it a little bit later in life and learn, you know, that kind of message and whatnot. Did you always kind of have a soft spot for, you know, people who didn't fit in, or did you go through any kind of angry period about it and then learn to kind of, you know, kind of help? Or was this always a message you've been trying to figure out how to kind of get out and it just finally find you with this book?
I never disliked people. I never had that chip on my shoulder like I was angry for being picked on.
Right.
I always needed and fought for the acceptance from all the people who didn't accept me. The kids that I grew up with that did that, I mean, and it's kid stuff, man. I'm not looking back with any sort of, like, you know, I'm not going to tell you stories that are going to shock you of things that happened to me, but it was typical kid stuff. And I look back at that and I'm like, you know, I don't harbor any anger. I didn't have any resentment towards them. I just always wanted to be their friend. I wanted to be accepted. I wanted to have those friendships and those relationships that everybody else was having. But I didn't, first of all, know how to do it because I was a goofball. And second of all, I was so attached to my mother and my father and my brothers and sisters at home. I was a mama's boy and a homebody. And I just, that was my comfort zone. So when I got out of that, I had, you know, almost separation anxiety and didn't know how to be a normal functioning person.
Right.
In a school environment or a social environment. As I got older, I absolutely did. I know you pick on me for not finding that joke, but that's what actually helped me get along with people was sense of humor. You know, it was my natural defense. So it was not something that I learned. It was something I've always had.
Nice.
Natty and I almost weren't friends the first time that we met because I scared him. He thought that I was a big bully. He didn't understand my personality yet, but he came in to do something for us. He was doing our website, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he gave us a price of, like, I don't know how much it is, $1 gazillion. And I was like, you know, I forget how I put it, but he almost left. He said I scared him and he didn't want to be around
him. It was he and Rich at a Panera. That was where we first met.
Yeah.
Wow. Romantic.
It does sound like an intimidating scene and all. They're just like feeding off each other, improvising, telling you how you charge too much for your work. And I could see that happening.
I had the U-pick too. And then they're over there. They're like, hey, I need a suggestion for a job in a weird place. And I was just like, I don't know what we're doing right now. This is
Barista in Coffee Can Alley. He's like, no, I got to go.
Yeah.
This is too much.
Guys, I mean, once you do something like this, and it's wonderful work that's here. Obviously, everyone asks the next question here. Is there a second one in line? Is there any thought to getting another book or a different story in line, or are you just riding this high right now?
Yeah, I got to talk to Natty. I got like three ready to roll.
Oh, God.
I don't know. I don't know if he's got the intestinal fortitude to do it.
Well, it's weird. Since putting this out, I've had like several people. They're like, oh, hey, I've got a book I need you to illustrate. And I'm just like,
yeah.
It was so time consuming and so overwhelming. And so like when Natty would, if he hit a bumper or something in the road or something wasn't going his way, and, you know, everybody expected me to just be, even you expected me to be out of my mind about deadlines and stuff like that. Was I ever? I was never. I said, it's all going to get done, man. I trust in you more than anything. I just calm down, relax. We'll get it there.
So last year at Rich was having a promotion, like for his job, police force. And there was like the mayor of the town, whatever. And we all kind of went to it. And I was at a almost like a nervous breakdown, like a mental, like I had hit a wall with it. And I couldn't get things right. And it just wasn't working. And so I would like make stuff and throw it away and make stuff like several times. Mm-hmm. And, cause that's the thing is like a lot of my, like whatever, but my jokes and like my drawings, they're very simple. And so it looks like you could just be like, okay, here's your book. I'm done.
Right.
But it's not like I have to get the composition right or the backgrounds and the lighting and the colors and like whatever, like, and I am very a harsh critic of my stuff, and I also have a hard time letting go, like being done, because like you could just sit there and tinker with drawings forever if you, but like there has to come a point where you're right. Like okay, exactly. This one's done. Yep. And on to the next.
I have to tell you guys something that nobody else would know if you weren't involved in it. The difference between the Kindle online book and the paperback book are almost two completely different books. And in 1 week, Natty took all the artwork from the Kindle and everything that mattered and everything that had to be in the book, and he condensed it down so that it would fit in the paperback. So the artwork and everything was compressed and reduced, and things were removed and placed in different areas, and it created borders that it was just to see one next to the other. Yeah, it looks similar, but to understand what went into it was just pure professionalism. He's amazing.
That's awesome. Yeah, I could talk to you guys more and more about the whole you know, production of making a book and advice for people trying, but that's for another time. I'm so happy that you guys were able to put this together and see the project through and put out something that really deserves looks and people deserve to go read it. And you guys deserve credit for following through on a vision and doing it. You guys have always been close friends in the comedy world, so I'm very happy for you guys. If you want to go grab the book or see it or read about it or get info, where's the best place for anyone listening to go get info on the book?
Go to Amazon, and it's Douglas, A Christmas Tale. You can get it on Kindle, and you can get it on paperback.
Or, if they're just looking for information, like if you're on Facebook, you can go to facebook.com/DouglasChristmasTree, I think is the URL. And yeah. So like, and that has a link to the Amazon if you can't find it.
That's awesome. Both of you are also comics. Whenever this whole thing does end and we're able to get together and perform again, Joe, you're part of McDonald and Carney. People love improv and whatnot. Where can people go to check that out?
McDonaldandCarney.com. We also have McDonald and Carney on Facebook. And Natty's pretty much one of McDonald and Carney. He's the and
pretty much
McDonald and Carney.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Natty, you are an artist, podcaster, a little bit of a comic. Where can people go check your stuff out?
Well, I'm Natty Bumper Car everywhere. So that's Twitter, Instagram. You can go to the official Natty Bumper Car fan page on Facebook. And like you said, I have a podcast. It's called The Bumper Podcast, and it's amazing. And it's a silly, fun, weird listen. And the best description I've had of my podcast is it's like a nicer version of Adult Swim. And I was like, oh, that kind of weirdly makes sense. Hmm. If you go to my website, nattybumpercar.com, there's cartoons that I've made, all kinds of art, and all sorts of stuff. So I try to keep myself busy.
Absolutely.
And a final question. 2 years ago, episode 32 of Dumbfellas told us new episodes were coming right around the corner.
Was it 2 years already?
You want to give like an update on that after you?
KP ruined it. KP ruined it.
Let's just say that we haven't all been in a room together in a long time.
We're the Beatles now.
Well, yeah. If Douglas has taught us anything, you guys can accept each other, and there might be episode 33 sometime soon. Joe, Natty, congratulations on the book. So good to see you guys, and we'll talk to you soon. Happy holidays.
Thank you, miss guys. You guys. It's good to miss see you guys. Thank you so much.
Say hi to Izzy, okay?
Will do, buddy.
I will.
Will
I will. No problem.
Hey.
Brennan, were we allowed to mention your project that you worked on this year?
Which one?
The biggest, best project of your whole life.
Oh,
Sunny Boy.
The child?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We talk about him often here on the old podcast.
How's everything going?
Everything's good, man. I was telling Joe before this, it's, I guess he's starting to get in a little bit of a sleep cycle, but like during the day, he's just like me, man. Just cannot sleep. Like
just drinking.
Yeah.
Nonsense.
Yeah, just consuming bottles and staying awake. That's basically what he's doing. And smiling while farting. But
just like Daddy.
Yeah.
Just like Daddy.
He's starting to sleep at night, so that's been cool. The little acid reflux thing is maddening and very hard to manage.
Because yeah.
It's like you're feeding him, but at the same time, you're hurting him. It's like...
That's fun.
You know.
So babies get gassy, and my favorite thing that I ever did with my babies was when they were laying on the changing table. No, you take their little legs. If like, cause my youngest, I mean my oldest, he was really colicky, and you just do their little legs, and yeah. They're like a little fart machine.
Yeah, we do the little bicycles. But all is good, man. He's
that's
good
the
boy.
Name of our next book. Bicycle farts.
Yeah. weird follow up to Douglas the the Douglas the tree, but you know
it's like Return to Oz. That's it. It's just like all right.
What happened here? But
oh my gosh!
All right,
well, thanks again for having us, guys. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Yeah, good to see our pals Joe and Natty doing some nice in this world. You know, other than bombing on stage, they're doing great jobs in their book.
Yeah, maybe they'll be great literary minds, and they'll talk about their early days where they did pig and fart jokes on stage, you know?
Exactly. Old pig and fart jokes.
Yeah. That show didn't really take off. Like the pig and fart tour, not as big as people thought.
Yeah, I know. But it's a really cool book. So go check it out. I'm currently getting a whole bunch of them for the little kids in my family. So,
Oh, that's awesome. Like we got one here. My wife has bought a few for some friends who have little kids, and everybody who's gotten it is really said and all. It's a really very nice story and beautiful animation. And I'm not even like heaping it up because we're friends with those two guys and all. Yep. It is a really good book.
You didn't buy me one though.
That is true. You do have a child, huh? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm not good gift wise, I seem with you. Like I'll kind of give you an example, like kind of like one of the stories I was gonna tell tonight. So I had some spare beers in the fridge. We had the company as I said earlier, the company virtual party, and like when we do these meetings, they encourage people, hey,
get have a drink and all relax or whatever.
They encourage people, get the funnels out. Let's get crazy.
But the kind of reason why I had these various beers was I originally planned to get a bunch of local beers and ship them to you.
Oh.
And for months now, I've come to the realization that I have zero idea how to ship beers because apparently it's illegal. So it was kind of like one of those, well, the thought that counted right there.
You have to like pack them in coffee grinds, like for drug sniffing dogs and stuff like that.
Well, it's something like, I mean,
is it really illegal to ship beer to one another?
For what I understand, for what I read up, because a vendor sent me some brews from some other kind of like local place up in Illinois, but it's like a very special packing. And I guess you got to have a license to do it or something like that. You can't just like simply like put a can of Budweiser in a UPS package and ship it up. Hence, like I had like 7 different beers for you and I was like, oh, this would be cool. And
I hope you drank them all during your trivia game. Like, screw him, you know.
What? I won? I'm just clicking the one button there. I guess I know a lot about Ramadan. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it was a thought. It was, you know, it was like when you give you forget your mom's card every year. Like, just hold
That's
on.
That's true.
Just hold on to those beers for another whole year, so they'll be nice and fresh by that time, and then send them to me.
Well, that was like my thought process. Like, I got one of the Nappy Roots, who were a former guest. I had their beer. I was like, yeah, I'll put this in the pack. And like I said, the vendor who sent me the beer, I'm like, oh, you know, I'm not going to drink all these. I'll send them. And I had all these grand gestures ready to go. And then in the end, it's just like, maybe I'll send him a card. I don't know.
Well, I'll still accept the gift. What we should do is you should buy 2 of each of those beers and we can have a little virtual flight together here on the podcast and taste them and talk about them or something like that.
Yeah, I'd be down with that. But I guess getting back to my story. So like I said, I had the beers and we did the virtual thing. I've been running around. I actually made matzo ball soup since it's the first night of Hanukkah for the wifey, but I forgot to factor in my 6 o'clock workout. So it was kind of a weird feeling as I'm doing like reverse crunches and everything with like a buzz going on. It was just something that like I'd never thought I would experience in my life, and all like lifting weights with like a little buzz hand in my head.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is that a regular thing for you?
No, not really. In fact, sometimes like I don't usually like to go to the gym at night. I like to try to go right after we're like work or during the day. And every once in a while, you know, you come home from work or something or have dinner and I'll have a beer. And I'm always just like, as soon as I have the alcohol, I just don't want to go. But I feel like it's not a big deal. Like, I feel like it might enhance the workout. I might be able to lift more.
It did put me out of place. Like, it wasn't, I don't want to say like it was bad where it's like, oh, I can't do this workout. And eventually like it sweated out, but it's just like, as you're like head is like in a little, like, I don't know what to say. Like rope, like floating in your head.
Now, how many did you have?
I just had 2. I mean, they were kind of high on the ABV, but,
I mean, 2 is enough to prime the engine. 2 is enough to like, yeah. All, you know, get a little warm in the face and get a little, you know?
Yeah, I wasn't like drunk, but it was still like the feeling of the buzz and like, okay, reverse crunches and lift weights at the same time. And it's like my brain's like, what? Is that a thing now?
Yeah.
I couldn't comprehend it.
And like 2 is always the, like after you have like 2, at least like, not like Budweiser's or Miller Lights or something like that, but if you have 2 like stronger beers, that's usually what triggers me to be like, all right, I want a couple more. Like, now we're in like relax mode and hangout mode, and I want to have like one or two. Like one beer is always like, it's fine, you know, but like as soon as the two, maybe three, then it's like I'm not doing anything for it. And then it's always like after that amount where like the bad diet comes in, I want some snacks. And one is totally fine. One is like my usual on like any kind of, you know, normal night. Like, yeah, I'll have one after dinner and then like I'll clean up while having the rest of that one. That's usually like the play. Then I'll, but like on the weekend, if I want to do anything and if I have three, then it's over. It's over. Well, I think that's the magic number. The third one's like, we're not doing anything for the rest of the day. Like some people get like, but it's funny on the opposite side, like yard work, like outside in the heat or something like that, I feel like it motivates me more to have a couple beverages.
Really?
Yes. Really? 100%. Like I enjoy being outside. If I have some music on, I could stay outside and do work for a long time.
I guess it depends on like the conditions. Like I do not enjoy like real heat and drinking. Like those two feelings together don't mix well with me. Okay. I know like a lot of people right. like to go to the beach and crunch a few drinks down and stuff like that, but like
is that your term? crunch a few drinks?
Yeah, I think the kids use that, right?
Mike, you want to come over tonight and crunch a few?
That's what they say on the TikToks, right? They're crunching beers.
I think so. I think that's on fleek.
Oh, okay. You know, okay. You
know, let's get.
I'll have to use that one of these days.
You know, like they're always like, "Let's get crunchy," and everyone's taking their tops off. You know, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. Like all the great '80s movies, that was like the big line by the party guy. You know, let's crunch some.
What's your favorite, like, activity to do when having, like, after having a couple? Like, is there anything you like to do, or is it just, are you more like a sit down and just chill kind of guy?
I mean, I like minor sports things, like maybe like.
I thought for a second you're gonna be like, I like mining. Like,
I like to find coal when I have a couple beers in me. I feel like I could really support the West Virginia when I have a couple in me. But I like some, like maybe playing cards, maybe like doing mini golf, shooting some pool. Kind of like minor sports activities, right. Something like that. Or if there's like a bunch of people watching TV, like I like put on like a really bad movie or TV show and just like mock it during the entire half an hour, kind of like Mystery Science Theater 3000. It
just something ruining like movies and shows for people, you know, like
Berlew, it's Schindler's List, man. Oh, I got a joke for this scene.
Yeah, I would say I love, I agree with you. I love like little stupid games and stuff like that. Like, I love a good drinking game, like with friends, like cards or something like that. Like, not where you need to get like blasted, but it is fun to play like a dumb game or beer pong or stuff. Like, all those I think are still pretty great. But I also love like swimming. Like, I love hanging out in the water while having like a beer. Like when I go on vacation. Which seems like forever now because we don't do that anymore. Like when I go with my family, we love to bring down like a drink and float around in like tubes and like just stay in the lake, or we play like frisbee or stupid things right in like the shallow water with a drink in hand. That's like the best for me.
Okay. Like, okay. I could see that. Like at first when you're like in the water, I'm like, what, are you scuba diving drunk or
no? But one time, funny story, you said that. What funny that you said that. One funny story to say that. Let's try that again. I remember when I was like in college age, like 20, 21, me and my friends were in my parents' pool, which is an above ground pool. And we would, now when you were kids, you used to make a whirlpool. I don't know if you ever did that with kids. You would go around as fast as you can, make a whirlpool and try to go the other way, and you couldn't go the other way. It was so much fun. Actually, one time we made a whirlpool in my cousin's pool, and it was like a real one of those flimsy above ground pools, not quite a permanent one. It was like that in between pool.
Gotcha.
And we made a whirlpool so strong it ripped open, and the water just flooded into the backyard, into the street. And my cousin was like this close, because it was metal, but it wasn't like real good. You know, it was like flimsy. But it shredded so much that it was all serrated. And like, and he like was just stuck in between them, like holding the two ends like a super, like he missed getting shredded up by like centimeters. But yeah,
that would have to been the weirdest funeral procession ever.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't know how you make a speech and not bring up as he died the way he lived.
Drowning.
Almost drowning in a whirlpool and getting shredded and then being found in the middle of the road where the water flowed out.
Yeah, it was so we were let's say we were 20 and we thought this was a great idea to make a whirlpool. Now, we had had a bunch before we went in the pool. This was like college nights out, like going out and just have, so we go in the pool, we have our beers, and we thought it was a great idea to put our beers on the side of the pool. And here was the game. You just go around the pool and underwater, like, and let the whirlpool carry you. And wherever you popped up, if there was a beer, that's the one you just drank. And then you went back under the water. And at the time, it made perfect sense. In the end, it was just us swimming around drinking each other's beers.
I could totally see like ABC, like summer, trying to fill like that Tuesday night slot with the drunk whirlpool drinking.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that's a game. COVID has officially killed that game from ever being played again.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Chinese. Good job.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. Drunken working out sounds fun, but it also sounds, I feel like there's a point where your like muscles and body just are like, I'm not doing anything today. Like there's no way, like a beer after a really huge workout or a run or something is like the best feeling ever. A lot during it, I can't imagine being a good time.
Like I couldn't fathom like real weight trying to like do some lifts drunk. That I can't fathom that's entertaining or fun.
Yeah, or like I don't know. I like to work out because one, it makes me feel good, but two, I like to keep weight off from the beers that I'm, you know, I like to consume and stuff like that. I can't imagine combining. I feel like just it's a negative and a negative. There's no gain in the workout at all.
You know? Just like two monsters coming together and seeing who butts heads and wins, the kind of thing, like a Freddy versus Jason kind of thing.
Exactly. No real ending. It's just a negative. I'd rather to have a couple more beers and then the next day work out really hard to pretend that I'm going to get rid of that awful night I had. But I think it's time to wrap this one up. So we got a lot of things to look forward to, okay? We always get excited this time of year, or I do anyway, because one, we always put out our Christmas episode, and our Christmas episodes become kind of fun. It's we always search for something very Christmassy, talk Christmas bits and a Christmas guest. We have a really good one. I don't want to ruin it just as of yet. But then the following week or two, depending on where the date falls, we also like to look back on the year. And I can't fathom, and like 2020 sucked for a lot of reasons, but it's been pretty damn good for me in some ways too. And I'm sure for Berlin, like the podcast has never been better. I looked back on it. We're going to hit right around 67 episodes for the year, which makes up for those years that we missed a couple weeks. We blew that out.
We had like 12 missed weeks some years. And so,
right. So we have interviewed like so many amazing people. Like this year, we always do this stupid episode where we give out the Verbies, if you will. Our little award for different categories, best female interview, best athlete, musician, things like that. And this year is really, really hard. So it's going to be a nice little reflection on the year we had. Put it this way, this year started with Dan Severn and is ending with a really cool Christmas guest. So looking forward to that. And we started to schedule out 2021. Already put a bunch in the calendar. So there's a lot to look forward to here. We're approaching the episode. Hopefully there's no pandemic this year, so we don't hit 400 by March. Yeah. But we had a lot of fun.
Yeah, vaccines, who knew it caused a new disease? Damn it.
Yeah. There's a lot of places to listen to us. You got your standard iTunes, but you can go to Spotify. You can go to Google Play. You can go to a bunch of internet radio stations. We're on a few. What are some of the ones we're on again? We're on Denville Radio, RTF Sports Network, Discovery County Network. And is there one I'm missing?
I think that's all in comingrightup.org. That turned into like some kind of Chinese gambling site.
Yeah, so we're really big on with Chinese gamblers. We're like the podcast of people gambling in China.
And we haven't come back to WHBJDB. That was like our cup of coffee with an internet radio station in Pittsburgh.
Yes. But anyway, there's a lot of places to listen to us. The BS Podcast Network. And we got some new sponsors this year. So please go check us out on the old internet machine. And go check out our new sponsor, DSE, which is Dynasty Sports Empire. They are a new supporter of the show. And I guess that's it. We're just having a lot of fun doing it. So, guys, like.